You're listening to The Crime Collective.
This is a true crime podcast, so it will contain some confronting themes. Listener discretion is advised.
It's your turn.
It is my turn.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, I've been recording for a while, so we're okay.
I should be used to that by now, shouldn't I?
Yeah, yeah. Well, because there's no correct way to start a podcast.
No.
I want to learn our theme song so I can sing along with it. And then
there might be one evolved today when we start thinking about the street.
Possibly.
Near Balfour Street, if anyone out there knows.
Yeah.
The street near Balfour Street, near the hospital.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I mean, I could Google map it, but I just don't have that much vested interest in it. All right, so I guess you start this one.
Yes, I do. So welcome to The Crime Collective. My name is Claire.
My name's Ben.
And my name's Tash.
That's right. Yay. Today, ladies and gentlemen, for the first time we have a guest. Put your hands together for Ms. Is that right?
Ms. Yes.
Ms. Tash Turner. Yay, yay, yay.
I like half of my name to sound like a bee sting.
Yeah. Ms. Tash, you know, I looked up your job title for the correct term. It's Ms. Turner is an educator. Yeah, I looked it up. It's the only thing I researched for today, by the way. So this is our first guest, and I couldn't be happier. I'm surrounded by two people I very much enjoy. So it's a good day for me. So Tash is going to get our first story today, and then at the end of the episode, me and C Biscuits over there. Did you like that one?
That's the new one. I like it.
Are you having trouble with your microphone stand?
It keeps flopping.
You're going to end up with your head, right down. I'll fix it in the break.
All right.
So I'm going to hand it over to you, Ms. Turner, and we'll give it a go.
All right. Thank you for inviting me along to one of these. As I wouldn't say it's a passion. It's kind of like one of the wrong things to say about it, I guess.
No, I don't know. You can be passionate about true crime. How many episodes of CSI did we watch together?
All of them.
Yes.
Bones. I'm working my way through Silent Witness at the moment because, the interest in the pathology behind somebody who's deceased and what caused that.
They did a cracking episode last week of the nitty gritty. No, the week before.
Yeah. Like forensic entomology.
Oh,
yes.
It was cool.
The entomology, and I think CSI was one of the avenues where I really thought it was fascinating.
Yeah.
Especially what insect larvae is where, and they can tell how and where it came from and how long it's been in the ground based on the actual entomology of the body that is there. So.
Yeah, I love that show so hard. And it's just come on Netflix, by the way, the original.
Ooh, okay.
Yes.
Yeah, Las Vegas.
Get back to the start.
Yeah. Yes, unfortunately on Prime they only had like from season 8 onwards, but, season 5.
Sons of bitches, licensing.
Yes.
Yeah. All right, well, we'll let you do your thing.
Well, today, I suppose the true crime story that I wanted to introduce myself that I've been doing a lot of reading about, and it's one that you could spend like literally years of your life trying to understand, unpack, unravel, and that kind of thing. The crimes itself, and I'm not going to say that they were lesser crimes, we are dealing with robbery and rape, which is an interesting mix of pathology behind it, or thinking behind it, because robbery comes from a completely different psyche than what rape is, whereas robbery is usually opportunistic or dealing with money or just basically a spur of the moment kind of thing. Rape is all about enforcing power. Well, I can say in this case is usually about enforcing power, and meaning that something in your life is impotent, whether it be sexual or in your day-to-day life, and how strong you feel in your circle of society, I suppose.
Fascinating. That's fascinating.
That's it, where you don't have control over those other parts.
No, taking control over something. So rapers, generally speaking, and they're always excuses or differences in opinion to it, but rape is always all about power and enforcement and taking away somebody else's power. So
usually
in a sense,
hand in hand with murder too.
Yeah, usually murder's the cover-up element of it as well too, so you can continue doing that. And that's, I think, where the birth of a serial comes into play with that one, which is this one was the Ohio State University rapes. There were three.
Yeah, I am aware of this, but no details and nothing behind it.
There were three on record, and actually one that was an unrecognized victim as well too. So happened very quickly over the course of 12 days. The first one was coming out of a medical center. So it was all around the Ohio State University and all the different courses and that kind of thing there. So one young girl, all around the ages between 18 and 22.
Mm-hmm.
So the victimology was a particular type of that one. So all students as well too. So that those 12 days being on campus at Ohio would have been pretty graphically hair-raising if you were a female. And it was definitely female-driven. So just word out there too, like not all rape is actually female-centred and female-oriented as well too, so recognising that this one in this case was, which turns out interesting a little bit later on.
All right.
So the first one was walking to her car at the college campus and was driven at gunpoint, taken to bushland nearby, raped and then also held at gunpoint while she wrote this person a cheque. Forced to cash it and give her person the money, her rapist the money so he could continue on his life. So,
oh, my God.
In that one instance, there are two competing or two completely different psyches.
Go.
So one basically really needing money or really needing to finance or just basically the thrill of the robbery and one taking power and control.
Yeah.
So that was the first one. The next two were relatively simple. So he graduated from taking them at gunpoint into bushland to using their own cars and making them drive somewhere more secluded in an environment. There is a fourth victim which was uncredited and unnoticed, but there it is noted that there was a fourth person there as well too. Now, how they actually caught this person was relatively simple in terms of investigation. There was on record a mugshot of this person, whose name I'll tell you in a moment, and also a palm print or a fingerprint on the inside of the second girl's car. So all women went to the police for assistance and help, and through just investigating and local investigating, they found that this person was on record through a mugshot and also had fingerprinting from a crime that was in 1975.
Okay.
These were all in 1977, in and around the start of October.
Oh, okay.
At the university. And in 1975, this person was on record as William Stanley Milligan, more commonly known as Billy Milligan, and more commonly known as the campus rapist.
Yeah, that's the one I've heard.
Yeah. One and the same. Interesting statement of one and the same.
Yep.
So was recognised through fingerprinting and through the through a mugshot, went and was arrested at the time. Now, he was out on parole from an aggravated burglary in 1975, so he wasn't supposed to have guns or anything in his household, which let them have a warrant to go and search his household and that kind of thing. So when they went in and arrested him, he was very, very submissive, led them to where all the guns and everything was, but on the way out said, just be really careful of the bomb.
Oh, by the way.
Whoa.
Drop that little bomb in.
Yeah. later on to be found out that it was not true and that kind of thing. So basically just something that was offhandedly said, well, not offhandedly said, but on the way out. So anyway, so broke parole and his conditions of parole and that kind of thing and end up being arrested and incarcerated then and there. So as we move on through the case, what people started noticing was something really different. The witnesses' statements were inconsistent with this one because at one point one of them said the man had a German accent.
Oh.
And the other one said that there was a real feminine element to this person's accent and almost felt apologetic and more loving as they sort of exited the rape scene, if you will. And the other one said that the person was talking in a smaller child's voice or a younger child's voice and that kind of thing. So people started noticing some inconsistencies with behaviour. So Billy was then given two public people to look after him. What are they called? I've forgotten what they're called. Public.
Billy. So, sorry.
Public defenders. It was given legal representation that was not funded by anything other than the state.
Yeah.
In the form of first, the Gary Schweikart.
That I believe about
I
right.
Did I put the right inflection on the question mark of how to pronounce that name?
Yeah, if you don't
first
know.
Of all, who then went and employed a young lady called Judy Stevenson to give him a hand with this case, because what was unraveling was something a little bit interesting, and also the first precedented case of how this person was convicted in the end.
Okay.
So, convicted on 3 counts of kidnapping, 3 counts of aggravated robbery, and 4 counts of rape. So, robbed 3 people, and I think the 4th person was raped but uncredited in the robbery. So, imprisoned to Ohio State Penitentiary, where he appeared very confused. He was very subdued at certain points and very different for different people that were talking to him. Any interaction that they were having, and when they were interviewing him, the people were saying that it was like I was talking to different people. Mm. Okay, so enter.
Oh,
I think what everybody is sort of getting at now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That is this person pretending to be different people every time he is interviewed.
Yeah.
Back in the day, we used to call it a multiple personality disorder.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's called dissociative identity disorder. And there was a change in the way that people label that, because even psychiatrists, and that's not a psychologist, but even psychiatrists still disagree to that to this day. So Billy was actually then given quite a team of psychiatrists.
Now, I don't know the difference between, I know one can give prescription medication and the other one can't.
Mm.
I don't know which one's which.
Psychiatrist can prescribe.
Psychiatrist can prescribe. They're an MD because they can.
Psychologists deal with behaviour that is learned more so. Psychologists are more dealing with people with anxiety or trauma and that kind of thing. Psychiatrists generally deal with a fractured or chemical imbalance within the brain. So if you are a person with schizophrenia, you need a psychiatrist.
Okay, so they are the medical doctors. So to put this in perspective, and this is really left of field, the fictional TV character Frasier.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And his brother were both MDs, because I remember they used to say they went to Harvard Medical School.
They're both psychiatrists.
Yeah, but a psychologist doesn't have to do an MD, doesn't have to do a PhD. They do...
You do a degree.
A degree, 100%.
Because that's important.
There's some lint on your shirt. It was driving me crazy.
Distracting. Distracted by the lint.
Okay, I put it there on purpose. See, psychology. I know that's going to really upset Ben for the next half an hour.
So, well, I've been looking. A piece of hair on your left shoulder has been bugging me for a while, and I restrained myself. Oh, well, it's left for me. Right for you.
So basically we're dealing with a whole heap of OCD people sitting in the room right now. Well, that would be dealt with by a psychologist.
Thank you very much.
Okay, a roundabout way of saying that. So, yeah, psychology, behavioural analysis and that kind of thing probably would refer somebody to a psychiatrist if they felt that there was a chemical imbalance that can be corrected with medications.
Our friend, I might say hi now, but our friend George is a...
She's a psychiatrist.
Psychiatrist.
Yep.
Okay, okay, good, good, good. I've never known the difference between the two. I'm sure I did kind of unconsciously know, but okay, now I know. I've learned something. Hashtag yeah. Crime Collective. Okay.
If you were suffering from anxiety or any kind of anxiety, mm. you would go to a psychologist if they considered it to be more serious, like schizophrenia or some sort of imbalance in your brain. They would refer you to a psychiatrist.
And this guy's now got a team of both.
He's got a team of psychiatrists.
Psychiatrists? Oh, shit. Okay, so it's the real deal.
Yeah, it's the real deal. He was first misdiagnosed as schizophrenic. So they thought the multiple personalities that he was presenting with were voices in his head.
Ah.
So hearing guidance from voices in his head and things like that. So,
okay, all right.
But at this point in jail, he was legitimately really confused with why he had been charged. By the term legitimately, that is the appearance of everybody that had to deal with him, including the first psychiatrist, whose name I don't have written down there, but who referred them on to a guy called George Harding, who owned his own clinic and his own hospital, just saying.
Mm. Oh. Okay.
No
okay.
agenda there at all.
No,
yeah, okay. All right.
Okay. So started noticing in terms of while he was in jail, he was given, before awaiting trial and that kind of thing, he was given art supplies and that kind of thing and was quite a talented artist and did a lot of drawings. However, what people were noticing was sometimes he'd used his left hand.
What?
Sometimes he would use his right hand.
Oh, my gosh.
His actual writing styles changed, or his words and things that he wrote in his right hand had different inflections, and a handwriting sample would say that it was two different people that wrote it.
That is out there, yo.
Yeah, it gets worse.
Okay, I'm ready.
Feel free to butt in at any time if you have other questions.
Yep.
So they had a team. George Harding employed Dorothy Turner, who did... who was another psychiatrist who did a Warshak test on him, which is the, you know, look at the
pictures
of the ink painting and what do you see and that kind of thing, which were really inconsistent. The responses were sometimes very juvenile and almost to the point of, I don't use this word outside of its proper meaning, which is retardation.
Mm.
So showing some sort of brain deformity, unable to identify things, up to savant, which is up to your genius level. So an IQ of 128 plus. So that was inconsistent with and very difficult to actually fake.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, you could act like a small child and that kind of thing, but if you are not a genius, there's no way that you could
fake
the other way. Yes. Yeah.
Then an ECG was run, the one where they actually monitor your brain function once again. Sometimes they did multiple ones of these, sometimes brain patterns of a very small child and sometimes a brain pattern of an older person, as well too. So all of these basically inconsistencies were coming out. All the team were actually brought in after he was at one point really very depressed, and in his artwork he did an artwork called the hanging doll, which was a real suicide watch kind of note for them, and he'd pulled the porcelain toilet off the wall, shattered it, and tried to kill himself with the broken pieces of it. So
okay.
That's when he was admitted to the another institution that was for the criminally insane at that point, and he was diagnosed with schizophrenia. This team came in and did some more tests. Now, at this point, here's where the problem with charging him was. Was he actually mentally competent to stand trial? And did he understand at the time of what he was doing that it was wrong? Did he show remorse for what he was doing? And at that particular time, he didn't actually remember anything that he had done.
I would say, from the outside looking in, hearing this information right now, I would say no. He would not be. But this was when?
1977, in and around the start of October. So over a 12-day period, the end of October, he was actually charged and taken out of society.
Okay. Yeah, they wouldn't have seen a lot of this before then.
No, it's been like the whole idea of multiple personality disorder has been around since the 1800s. But the problem is proving legitimacy.
Gosh, how would you prove it?
You wouldn't have had the testing.
It would take a phenomenal amount of good psychiatrists, psychologists.
That's what I've always wondered. Is it like, are they just putting it on? Is it genuine?
Yeah, and that's the big thing. And I think some other noted psychiatrists have likened some of the most amazing, like Laurence Olivier and at the time, Laurence Olivier and who was the one that had the 700 book? Actress had the 700 marriages.
Anne Heche?
No.
That's not right.
Elizabeth Taylor.
Yeah.
They said, well, how can they take on these personas? And, you know, you method acting and that where you get into the persona of another person and that how come it's not just the same as this? So to explain that, in our personalities, I have to say I am not an expert at this. This just comes from my own reading and my own understanding of it. I have done no testing, so if you're out there listening to it, not an expert, don't claim to be.
Yeah.
So the difference between the way that normal person deals with trauma, deals with conflict, deals with anything that is in disagreement with them is we have a range of emotions.
Yeah.
We have a range of emotions. We work through them. We go through peaks at our heightened and we are able to self-soothe and calm ourselves back into what we have a relaxed normal state or as normal state as you can possibly be. People with DID or the dissociative identity disorder create personas to be able to cope with those. So it's what's called a fractured personality. So my anger, I might be angry, but a person with DID might create a persona that's the only person that can deal with that.
Mm.
So my angry personality becomes a completely different person in order to cope with that, to be able to have those regular peaks and troughs and be able to deal with that
all of this
without somebody else, the other side of their personality having to deal with it.
Mm.
That makes perfect sense.
Yeah, and I wish I could remember. I've listened to a podcast very similar. This lady, she had a lot of trauma as a child and she developed, I think, hundreds of different personalities because it would get to a point where one personality could cope with what she was being put through and then she had to develop another one and another one to sort of take over.
They were all just coming off the back of the next. So when she reached the peak, she literally reset into another person.
Mm.
I guess that other personality still had the trauma.
Mm-hmm.
And the one before that is kind of like that deal?
With that, the person that is dealing with that particular trauma takes that particular trauma in their personality. The other person is completely unaware of that trauma.
Mm. Oh.
So it's like compartmentalizing your life.
That's the word I was trying to think of.
Yeah.
Everyone compartmentalizes. I know I do quite a bit.
But, well, we have to.
Well, you have to.
I mean, sometimes it's not a healthy way of coping with it, but, you know, you do what you do to get through.
Sometimes it's a delay of coping with it. I mean, everything always comes out in the end. And if you see this, the trauma that this person had been through in his life pre this, which we'll go into in a moment, allowed him to have, well, there was 37 personalities with all different, like completely anywhere from, like, I mean, he had Arthur, which was an English sort of older person who was really good at science and medication, and he was the person who would always mop up after the or deal with the problems or clean up the problems and that.
Oh.
Alan was a very keen manipulator, so he was very charming. Mm-hmm. And these are all the some of the personalities of Billy Milligan. Tommy was a massive escape artist, which helped him out later on when he was in a criminally insane institute that he escaped from. Reagan was a Yugoslav communist, complete with language.
Really?
Complete with language. And the one that was blamed for the robberies. So Reagan was the robber.
Okay.
So initiated the actual gun control of the person. Later on after that, after the robbery and the abduction had occurred, a female character called Adelana would take over, who was a 19-year-old lesbian. She's the one who looked after the personalities, was the mother figure and that kind of thing. And this is why I said earlier on in the piece that most rapes are about power and control. The justification for this one was needing to feel love and connection.
Okay.
In this particular character. Does it absolve the person of raping somebody else? No. Absolutely not.
Never.
So the two personalities that were responsible for the main atrocities that Billy were Reagan, the robber, and Adelina, the rapist, who was a female character.
Hmm. Whoa, this is unbelievable.
Yeah, there are more. The first instance where he had was called Little B, and that's his first probably personality split due to some domestic violence and of his mother and partner and that kind of thing, where he'd be rocking on the floor and say, "Don't worry, little B, I got this. Don't worry, little B, I got this."
Mm. Oh, it's heartbreaking. Mm. Okay.
Yeah. Yep. If you need a moment, please let me know, because then anyone else listening that I'm sure they can pause your podcast in this one and take a moment. If you are a person of trauma, please go seek help.
Absolutely.
Because this person is no excuse for it, but it's also that big question of nature versus nurture. Well, people call them evil and monsters. Are they created or are they born that way? Which is a huge question.
It's a massive question. What we've found in a majority of cases so far that we've covered is that a lot of these peoples are created through what we found, strangely enough, is in physical injury, brain injury, and horrific childhoods. But there's also some that we haven't covered yet, like the English Ripper. Mm-hmm. I don't know that we'll ever cover him.
It's been covered so much. Yeah, what can we bring to it that's new?
He didn't have a bad childhood. He was a truck driver. Who?
Oh, I thought you meant like the...
No. Not Jack the Ripper.
Not Jack the Ripper.
No. The English Ripper is another dude in the 70s, late 60s, 70s. There's a Netflix Yorkshire series on him. Ripper. And he didn't have a horrific childhood. He was a well-loved child, but he was a murderer and a rapist.
Yeah.
So
there's sociopaths, and getting back to the difference between psychology and psychiatry and that kind of thing, there are sociopaths and all different types of labels for people that just are born with a chemical imbalance in their brain.
That's it. And they say, are they mad or are they bad? Like,
yeah, that's it's super true.
It all comes down, and it all really just all comes down to a chemical.
Mm.
Yep.
And what's released in your brain, whether or not you, and I know people that have been born without empathy and had, it's a learned trait.
Mm.
They had to actually learn empathy, which is, you know, if you don't have empathy for what you're doing, it makes killing and raping and taking people's liberties away from them a lot easier when you don't feel anything about it.
Absolutely.
Mm. It's that impulse control of, I want this, I'll take it, I don't care.
Yep.
And it's not in their brain that they don't care, it's they literally don't
care. They don't know how to care.
No. And some of the kids I worked with pre-teaching and that kind of thing in a different program before I was fully qualified teacher, I've come across all types. And these are teenagers, you know, on a set on a bad path and that kind of thing. Some of them were forced to be that way. Some of them had perfect loving home childhoods and have just chosen, you know, it's okay to put my daughter on a hot plate, my sister on a hot plate, because it looked like a fun thing to do.
Wow.
You know?
Okay.
Yeah, so there's no rhyme or reason.
No. So there were some other sort of peripheral ones, which were Mark, Sean, Robert, and what a character called the teacher. There was a Christine, there was a three-year-old girl in there where, but you'll notice that none of these personalities are actually mentioning the term Billy. At the time of his arrest, Billy wasn't present. And Billy only ever come out, and he made comments to the police that I think it was David that was the one that said that Billy is asleep at the moment and had been asleep, and there's contention for how long he'd been asleep in parentheses again, whether it was 5 to 7 years. So this person, the actual person who was the original personality, had not been present for quite some time. So David was the 9-year-old boy who was probably the character invented at the time of Billy's trauma in his childhood, which mm-hmm. I'll get to in a moment, who still knew about it and could compartmentalize it and sometimes was portrayed as being a twin or a different brother to mm-hmm. him in that. So okay. he knew about everything that went on in Billy's life and could communicate for Billy. So when Billy actually came out in one of the interviews, he'd say that he was continually repeating that every time I wake up, people are telling me I've done something terrible.
Oh, God, can you imagine that? Like not knowing and then just not remembering what's happened when you're not mentally present, like terrifying.
Yeah.
So they employed an expert at the time, which was Cornelia Wilbur. Now everyone knows about the whole case of the girl called Sybil, which was the younger girl Sybil. With 16 personalities. Mm. She was the leading consultant and person on that. But once again, it was the 70s and lots of people, there was great music come out of the 70s and there were a lot of really good options for the 70s, but it was almost like a decade of fighting repression from the 60s and 50s and 40s.
Okay.
Whereas, you know, all of these things were deemed, or thoughts that were deemed evil turned into artwork, you know. Yayo Kusama's happenings were basically orgies on film and that kind of stuff. So it went from a really protected society where nothing happened and nobody mentioned anything to, you know, let's just bring it all out in the open. So I suppose with that sort of freedom comes a different kind of reality for people with fractured personalities and or mental instability as well. So anyway, this team basically had to come in and ask him. There were three main questions, like, have you ever woken up somewhere and you don't know where you are? The answer was yes. Has anyone ever told you that you did something that you didn't remember that you were doing? The answer was yes. They were, of course, a lot more involved than just these simple questions. Have you ever noticed the clock hours go past and you have no recollection of what actually happened? And, of course, the answer was yes to all of those, which some dissociative states just like blank out and just go for an hour or something like that in a catatonic state and come back in and think, oh, what just happened? And it's like I was just looking at the fridge and then it's been 2 hours and I'm just woken up looking at the fridge again. So so that fractured type of thing. So he was eventually charged for all of those. But the problem was who can I charge? Because if there is a legitimate personality type, can I actually charge Reagan? Reagan wasn't a person who existed except for in the mind. Can I charge Adelina? But wasn't a person who actually existed. So there was two personalities, henceforth the robbery and the rape, two different type of psyches to create a crime. So in the end, basically what was done, he was considered to be mentally incompetent. It was the first case of multiple personality disorder, as it was called back then, or DID now, that was the reason for criminal insanity.
That's kind of where I thought this was going.
Yeah.
It felt like there was no precedent.
No, there was no precedent.
Because otherwise you would have heard it before.
Yeah. I would imagine, I haven't looked at the facts and figures, there are a lot of ones that tried. I would imagine there will be a lot of fakes out there, and I'm not saying that this person is. Once again, I'm not an expert. He had a team of experts who actually all agreed and sat down and had multiple meetings after multiple testing and interviews that this was a legitimised case of DID.
Mm. Wow. Gee whiz.
Mm. Yes. So he was committed to an Ohio penitentiary for the criminally insane. After a little while, Mr. Agenda, that's my judgment on it, George Harding took him out and put him in his own facility because they thought that he wasn't being treated where he was. And the only way that this person could go to trial for this was if and the Cornelia Wilbur was the expert, they would do this thing called fusion where they worked psychiatrically with him to bring these personalities together to make it more of a, this is an emotion rather than a person.
Right.
So if they could fuse these personalities together, he could start understanding what he'd done, take ownership of what he'd done and be able to stand trial. Now, in the end, he went to this George Harding facility for about 10 years. So for four rapes and murders and any other things that he'd done that they didn't know of. No murders as yet.
Yep.
He got 10 years for it. In which time, in 1986, 2 years before he was released, he actually escaped.
Right.
So he had his personality, which was Tommy.
Yep.
Would be able to get him out of anything. So really good with escaping, picking locks. Loved his drugs and all that sort of stuff. So he escaped from hospital, gained a fake identity and went under the name of Christopher Carr and befriended a person with a disability called Michael Madden, who after living with Michael Madden for a couple of months went missing.
Oh.
Michael Madden went missing.
Okay. So Billy Milligan was operating as Christopher Carr. Now, there's no evidence to say that Michael Madden was murdered, but he went missing.
Yeah.
And then for a fair while there, he was living in Florida cashing Michael Madden's disability checks.
Wow. Let's be honest. Kill the fuck out of that dude. Yeah.
There's no conjecture.
There's no... Yeah. Well, look, I'm not going to get sued over it. I believe that's exactly what happened.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, he had to know that he wasn't coming back to be able to cash his checks, right?
Yes.
Right.
So, absolutely. Okay.
All right.
So, cured, not cured. I suppose in this instance, is there a person that is this fractured ever going to be cured?
Yeah.
I don't think
highly
so.
Highly unlikely.
But was a renowned artist. He actually had exhibitions. He had his own little theatre company that he was going to produce this show. After he was released in 1988 by an independent psychiatrist. He was in 1991. He was released from any state supervision, so he could move freely and do whatever he wanted to.
Scary.
Holy cow! Are you serious?
Yeah. He ended up living in a mobile home on his sister had bought for him for his sister.
Okay.
On her property. So he had a brother, and this is one thing that somebody tried to tell me, whose name is Jim Morrison. No, it was not that. Not that Jim Morrison.
Okay.
He had a sister called Kathy Preston. He had a stepsister called Shala Milligan, which was his stepsister, but his mother's original maiden name was Dorothy Sands, and she ended up being Dorothy Moore in the end. Mm-hmm. So how does one become a Billy Milligan?
Here we go.
Yeah.
Hold on to your butt.
Yeah. So his mother was pretty much an abandoned ward of the state. Now, this is like, I'll go into this saying there really is no excuse because there have been so many people out there who've had a traumatic childhood, have had a traumatic background. Maybe they had the right supports in for them who've gone on to lead successful, productive lives.
Mm-hmm.
That being said.
And that would have been in the 1940s?
This would have been, he was 22 in the 70s, so it was 1950s.
50s, yeah. Yeah, okay.
1950s. So his mother would have been abandoned in the 1940s. Yeah, you're correct. Good mathsing. Well done.
Thanks, mate. That never happens.
So at 8, her mother died and her father just abandoned her. And she was a bit of a ward of the state and bumped around and that kind of thing and moved around. So when she was 16, she considered herself a bit of a singer and... wanted to make a bit of a name for herself. But the other thing that she also wanted was somebody to look after her.
Of course.
Yeah, okay.
We are now producing a stereotype of a person. Mm. The victimology of the mother, which in turn affected the kids' lives as well too. Very
generational
much so.
Trauma.
Yeah, very much so generational trauma. So they weren't rich. They weren't, you know, borderline poor. I'd say at some particular time she would be working in cafes and that. Eventually she was working in a mill of some kind where she moved back, and it would probably be the only independence that she had in her life from being one. So she married a guy called Dick Jonas, who was borderline alcoholic at the time, left to sort of pursue more of a career for herself in as a singer and that kind of thing. Then ran into a guy called Johnny Morrison, who started off very charming, and he was a singer and a comedian, okay, who started off very charming, end up pretty much really jealous of her talking to anybody, turned violent in the end. In the end, they end up leaving her. But if you'll notice that Johnny Morrison has the same name as Jim Morrison, so Jim and Billy were born Morrisons.
Okay.
So that would be the father. Okay. Now, shortly after the mother left him, he committed suicide and blamed her for it. She told the kids that he'd had an aneurysm, so they never really knew the true story about that.
No.
Now, after that happens, she's gone back to her hometown where she's gone and worked back in a factory and teamed back up again with Dick Jonas, the first sort of love of her life, who was a truckie.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't last as well, so kind of like traded Peter for Paul, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Anyway, didn't last. So basically trying to make it right for herself, worked in a factory, did some singing and that kind of thing, got the attention of I'll just say evil bastard called Charmer Milligan.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and to possibly one of the most horrific people I've ever read about in my life. It's no excuse, once again, but the atrocities that he did would be the product of Billy Milligan.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, he was really controlling. He was really racist. The kids were very young when he came on the scene, but old enough, especially his older brother, Jim Morrison, was old enough to recognise what was going on.
Mm.
Enter the little bee character. So you would think if the mother's going through this, where's the help, where's the support and that kind of stuff at the time. Very different time, very different in America to Australia. If you some policing enforcement is volunteer work.
Yeah.
Anybody can be deputised sheriff. I think it's a vote or something like that. Mm. Doesn't really have a characterisation of being a background check or am I right for the job kind of thing.
Yeah.
So at one point where Charmer had ripped hair out of his mother's head, including flesh as well, the kids had actually called for police support. And the officers at the time, when he's begging for them to please take us away, please take us away, said possibly this wouldn't have happened if she was a better wife.
Oh, okay. That old blame the victim chestnut.
Yeah, very victim blaming and that kind of thing. Once again, this is all red. This is all possibly media driven and that kind of thing, but also in interviews that has come out with him and his older brother as well too, as remembering that. So, of course, now they're on their own. They're not going to get support.
Yeah.
Now, this we'll call him Charmer. That's his first name because Milligan sort of like we –
Yeah.
Linked to Billy.
I see.
So Charmer was a really methodical abuser of the kids. Mm. His main attention, like there's Kathy in the background as well too, and also Challa, his daughter that he brought in. And what he's done is he's adopted the kids and they adopted their own kids because, you know, like outwardly it would have been, oh, this is the perfect marriage.
Yeah, blended Whereas family.
In behind, yeah. It always happened at the back of the house where he would beat them. In particular, Billy, and the guy had the presence of mind to not leave marks by using a phone book to put up against their head and beat them, pummel them with fists as well too. The two boys, he left the girls alone, but he would always say to the boys that if you tell anybody, I'm going to draw my attention onto your sister, Kathy.
Right.
So he's a real man.
Yeah,
a real charmer.
So after a while they decided, well, it sounds like he made the decision that he needed a little bit more privacy, so they actually moved to a town. Hang on a second, I'll get this right.
Mm-hmm.
A town called Lancaster where he bought a farm that was 88 acres, which gave him a hell of a lot more privacy to do whatever he wants. So this is where David's kind of like created that other brother.
Yep.
Didn't happen to me, it happened to my brother kind of thing. Whereby he had a barn and he had two really good childhood friends. The latter of the two, one was Sharon Lensing. So whenever these interviews were going on, these people would be saying what a sweet kid Billy was. He was always looking after us. He would never do something as atrocious as this, that kind of thing. And Pam Flynn was one of their neighbours at the time on the property, whereas he would take him into the barn, now batten down the hatches, kids, because when I read this.
Yeah, I'm ready.
Was absolutely atrocious. He used to sodomise him, so raped him. He used to tie him up to do so and blame him and do a lot of victim blaming. But one of the worst, and his neighbours had actually found him tied up after a few days in the barn. What the mother was doing at this particular time, I don't know. She possibly would have been terrorised herself, and in interviews and that kind of thing, she doesn't really take ownership of what was going on. So whether or not she's done that compartmentalizing it of herself, we'll never know, but there would be a certain amount of terror along her side of it, and you would hope guilt. The worst thing that he did is he used to actually bury him with a tube to breathe underneath the ground, but also urinate into it.
Oh my God.
So the things that this young person had gone through, and this is where trauma as a child is a lifelong thing, has made these personalities, because A, you've got that pride of it didn't happen to me, it happened to my brother, I'm protecting my brother. I can't deal with any, because the trauma sort of actually as a small child affects the growth and the stimulation and all the way that you interact with other people for the rest of your life. And it's kind of like a frozen in time moment in your brain that you don't tend to graduate out of. Yes, you still physically evolve and that kind of thing, but trauma-based activity for children will keep that child at that trauma based, and the way that they deal with things at that particular time is the way that they deal with things for life.
Yeah.
Wow, man, that's deep.
Yes, there are lots of studies going into trauma based teaching, especially for children and that kind of thing now, but how to get them basically, you're stuck in a fight or flight response, which is your lowest evolutionary kind of way of dealing with conflict for children. So, it was it's a horrible journey to go through, but to understand why this person's personality had fractured into coping mechanisms of lots of other things.
Hey, that's all well explained. Like, you know what I mean? Yeah. That is how,
And, I mean, I know he did atrocious things, but you can't help but feel sorry for him. Hey, like what he went through, you can understand. I'll tell you,
he's the worst, the first convicted criminal I've ever felt sorry for.
Yeah, while we have that, you can feel sorry for Billy as a kid.
Yes.
That's what I feel,
and we almost fracture,
feel badly for.
We almost fracture our empathy for. What he'd been through, but like it's still, there's still no excuse for somebody taking somebody's
freedom,
liberties or.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Away from them in terms of rape, because it's one of the worst. Sometimes murder would be better.
Because you're then inflicting trauma on them that they have to live with.
So eventually, Billy got out, and like we don't know what happened to poor
what was his name?
Michael. Was it Michael? Yeah, Michael Madden and that kind of thing, who had a disability himself.
Disappeared.
But, you know, victims who have been victimised can see other victims a mile off, you know, because of what they have in themselves. There are lots of other people which were called the undesirables, which were really bad characters in his persona, but eventually what happened to Charmer was his older brother had had enough. Jim Morrison held him at knife point and basically, when he was old enough and big enough, made him leave, like threatened his life and that kind of thing. So I eventually got him out the door.
Mm. Well, that's what cowards do when they're faced with something harder than them.
Yeah, they exactly.
They shrink.
When the kids have grown up enough to...
Exactly. But in interviews, there is a Netflix series out about him. There is a book and that kind of thing. There was going to be the movie rights to his story and that, but there are a lot of legal representations about who owns it in terms of fighting with the psychiatrists as to who owns his story. So not only were they the top notch of their time and everything like that, but they all had an agenda well too.
I guess, yeah.
That's it.
So eventually he was released. He ended up dying in, I think, 1991. Okay. No, 2014 he died of cancer. So he was basically penniless and living under his sister's good graces on a property in a caravan. But they did actually release some of his artwork, and he was a genuinely talented artist. He was very obsessed. Billy
was actually a really good artist, okay.
I think quite a few of the multiple personalities, because every single one of the personality was Billy as well, so in some way.
Okay.
Yeah.
That is absolutely fascinating.
Yeah. And the reason I chose it was the first recognised case of dissociative identity disorder that was given like the green light to say that this person is criminally insane. Yeah.
Wow, that is awesome.
Not competent to stand trial.
No. You know who else is a good artist?
Picasso.
Adolf Hitler.
Oh, yes.
He did some artworks, I believe.
Yes.
Sorry to take away from his story. But
if he could actually reach the top of the canvas. Yes,
he wasn't a big man. Thanks very
Somebody
much.
Somebody needed to tell him that though, didn't they?
Yeah, they did.
Part of the problem.
Yeah, thanks very much for that. That was fascinating.
That was
Learnt, that's the most I've learnt about anything in a decade.
Once again out there, people, not an expert.
All right, okay. Now let's, thanks again. That's so good.
It's intense, isn't it?
It is, but
To end off with what I was saying, I would say that anybody out there that's been triggered by this, please go and seek help.
100%.
Yes.
Mm. We can put some links up or some phone numbers. People
absolutely.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Right. It's my turn to try and bring the levity a little bit. Now, last episode, I hit you with some last words of convicted, right? So I'm going to go with that. I'm going to back this up. I've got a few I'm going to lay on you. These were last words before people got executed. But we did four last time. I did that. Okay, here we go. Are we ready? In 1995, James Lewis Jackson married Sharon Jackson and became a father of two stepdaughters. Due to heavy drug use, he had trouble keeping a job. After struggling with the marriage and his wife threatening to divorce, he ended up strangling her and her two daughters. It's about him. His last words. Warden, murder me. He then referred to Harris County, where he was convicted, as Sodom and Gomorrah, the biblical cities, destroyed by gods for their sins. I'm ready to roll. Let's get this party started. Okay, that is...
Can I ask, was he hung?
Lethal injection.
Ah.
Yeah. All right. Here we go. In 1958, James French murdered a driver who picked him up from hitchhiking. While serving his life sentence, he decided that he didn't want to live anymore, but was too afraid to end his own life. And so he killed his inmate to compel the state to execute him in the electric chair. And his last words, how about this for a headline? How about this for tomorrow's newspaper headline? French fries.
Ah, yeah.
Because his name was James French.
I saw that somewhere recently.
Yep.
I'm glad you explained French that because I didn't get it.
Yeah.
I've had too much intellectual thinking at the minute, so I needed to bring it down.
Yeah, I got you. Okay. Okay, this one's weird. Grover Cleveland, Reading. was mentally unstable, believing that he was the Prince of Abyssinia and was on a mission to bring his people back to the homeland. He was sentenced to death for starting an anti-government riot in which two of his followers were killed. We're still all waiting to hear what he has to say. His last words were, "I have something to say, but not at this time."
It's your last chance, buddy.
No, I think that's the ultimate control, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, guess what? No, I can't tell you.
Leave him wanting more.
Yeah. All right. I got one more. Then I'm going to kick it over to C. Bizzle. After a rough childhood and a string of failed marriages, Barbara Graham went into prostitution before being married to a bartender and drug addict. She soon left him for a business associate of his, Emmett Perkins, who ran an illegal gambling operation. The couple, as well as other accomplices, decided to rob a widow who was rumored to have a large stash in her home. Graham tricked her into letting them into the house by asking to use her phone. To stop the elderly lady's shrieks, she bludgeoned her to death with a pistol, and as a result, bludgeoned her with a pistol and as a result, killed her. The crew ended up overlooking the money and jewelry anyway and was caught a couple of months later. Somebody squealed. Bloody Babs, as the media called her back then, was sentenced to the gas chamber. Her last words were, "Good people are always so sure they're right." I don't even know what that means.
No.
It's, I guess it's a true fact.
Tongue in cheek, I'd say.
So are bad people, though. I don't know.
Good people are always so sure they're right.
It's hard to actually know the intent without the inflection of the voice as well, too.
Very true.
Mm.
Yeah.
You know what I don't want to hear? People's last words from their mouths.
It's
easier like this.
Yeah, recounting it rather than hearing it first person.
Yeah. All right, well, they're the last words. They're the last group of last words I have from convicted, well, murderers in nearly all these cases.
Mm.
Now, C. Bizzle, do you have something to
I
throw
do.
At me?
It's going to go for a little while. How are we running for time?
We've been running for an hour.
Okay.
Can I talk.
Should I save these for another time?
Well, I'll tell you, we want to save them for another time.
Because it's probably going to be a good extra 10 minutes.
No, okay. All right, well, that's fine. Well, thanks for listening. As always, if you want to reach out, please hit us up at tcrimecollective@gmail.com. That's the letter T, crimecollective@gmail.com.
And Facebook and Instagram. I think we're into the double digits of followers on Instagram now. So
over 10.
It's exciting.
Yeah, now we're killing it. Thank
we
you
have
very...
tens of followers.
Yeah, that's right. We have units of followers. Did you
can't
enjoy
say
yourself?
That now.
No. Did you enjoy yourself today?
Well, I enjoyed talking about a keen interest of mine. I don't know if enjoy is the
yeah,
right word.
Yeah, we've used the word enjoy before and I was like, is that quite appropriate?
Yeah. Look, I found it fascinating and interesting It's been mulling around my head, like when you first invited me to do something like that, I thought, yeah, I think I know the exact one that I want to talk about. And just thinking about the psychiatry behind it, yes, it's horrific and that kind of thing, but what can we do with that information moving forward, I guess, is the best one.
Would you consider coming back as a guest another time?
Yeah, we would love to have you back. That was amazing.
It was amazing. All right, well, thanks for having us. Hope you guys have a good day / evening, whatever you're doing right now, and we'll see you really soon. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Thanks.
We love you. Bye. Kisses.
Love you.
Bye.
Bye.
Kisses. You do the big kiss at the end. No, I'm doing it. That's my last one.
Have to have the last kiss.
That's right.
Damn.